Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, happy Monday, everyone, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. Hoping that everybody had a wonderful Easter, Passover, or whatever holiday you might have been celebrating this weekend. Before we get started with today's show and we introduce our guest, I'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsors, the people who make today's show possible. Markham Search LLC offers premier recruiting services throughout the United States, including contract, executive compensation consulting, retained search, and contingency search. So please do keep Markham Search in mind for all of your staffing and recruitment needs. Today we have with us on the show, Anna Mariano. She is the author of the Love Sugar Magic series, which has received starred reviews from Kirkus, School Library Journal, and Shelf Awareness. She grew up in Houston, Texas, and graduated from Rice University with a degree in English, and later earned her MFA in writing for children from the new school. Anna works as a tutor and part-time teacher with Writers in the Schools, a Houston nonprofit that brings creative writing instruction into public schools. In her free time, she likes to knit, study American Sign Language, and play full contact kiddish. So we may have to talk about that, Anna. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, so before we get into all of this, tell me about this kiddish thing, because that's not something I often come across in someone's bio.
Oh, yeah, Quidditch. So it's,
Quidditch, yes.
It is the sport from Harry Potter.
maybe
some people are familiar.
Right?
in the Harry Potter series, they play it on flying broomsticks, which we Muggle players don't have access to. So we just play on broomsticks that we use more like hobby horses. You just kind of put them between your legs and run. it's a super fun time. Actually, the U.S. National Quidditch Cup just happened last weekend.
That is not
a thing. It was in it was in Round Rock, Texas, so just outside of Austin. And if you get a chance to, you know, look up some YouTube videos of that, like, they're really excellent. It's actually a surprisingly athletic sport, especially playing in Texas. I mean, all around the country, they have great teams and internationally, but Texas happens to be the reigning champions of the Quidditch world right now.
That is amazing. That is, I think, the best thing I've done all day.
it's pretty fun.
That's amazing. And so, how did you personally become interested in it, and how do you even find a team? I'm diverging for a moment, so you'll have to bear with me.
No. I'm always happy to talk about Quidditch. So I found out about it in college. I was at Rice, like I think it said in my bio, and a couple friends of mine had started a team, and I sort of heard about it, went to see what it was. I was not a very jock type person. I was more of a nerd type person, which, you know, a lot of Harry Potter fans are. But when I got there, I was kind of surprised by the amount of, like, we actually had practices and we had to run and do push-ups. And that was kind of something I'd never, like, had the, I'd never had the motivation to do it before. But somehow when you put, like, Harry Potter, you know, broomstick in my hand, I was like, yeah, okay, I'll do some push-ups.
Seems like a great way to get kids into PE. I remember when I was a kid,
you
could not pay me enough to like run a mile around the track. And I was like, this is awful.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean,
fun.
And I definitely always did better when I like had a reason, like a competitive reason, but Quidditch really, really sold it for me. And it's such a nice community. There's college teams all over the country. There's community teams also, you know, more like people who are out of college or not in college who want to just, you know, play in their city. And if you go to the website of the, I think, USQ, United States Quidditch, they have, like, team locators. So if you want to find a team in your area, even if you just want to go out and watch a game, you can connect with a team. And I know LA's got a few teams, actually. They've got the Long Beach Funky Quaffles. They've got the Gambits, LA Gambits, I think. And then maybe one more that I'm forgetting.
Oh my God, that is fantastic. It's so funny. I think I even took that Harry Potter quiz one time. Everybody's probably seen it, where you like take the quiz to see what house you're supposed to belong in. Did you ever do
Oh,
that?
yes. Well, what house are you? Yeah.
I think I was a Ravenclaw. Does that sound right?
Yeah, that sounds good. That's the, like intelligent research, curiosity motivated type people.
Which one were you?
I'm a Hufflepuff.
Oh,
So
nice.
what are we, hardworking and fair and friendly?
That is awesome. Okay,
Hopefully,
sorry. For
that's
all
the
of our
goal.
listeners out there, this was just such an interesting thing that I had to ask her about Quidditch, and I
Nerding
had
out
no
about Quidditch.
idea. And like geek out
Well,
about
it
this for
does
a moment.
actually hopefully connect to my writing because I'm trying to write a book about Quidditch, and hopefully
Oh.
that will pan out someday. I like that community so much that I tried, writing about teams that play Quidditch. So
That is amazing. That's so cool. So I wonder, I guess that wouldn't be a trademark thing. You know, my brain, because I've run a legal recruiting company for so many years now, my brain goes right away to like, does the person who wrote the Harry Potter series own that? Is it like a trademark, or is that something anybody could write about? But I would imagine
I'm not
anybody could.
actually sure. Well, so I know that they've done some documentaries and lots of news articles about Quidditch because, it's a thing that people are doing. And the USQ and the IQA, the International Quidditch Association, they're both nonprofits. So I think they get around it in that way where it's like, oh, well, we're not profiting from it. But then, so I'm not 100% sure how it works. I'm sure if I get to a point where I'm trying to publish, then I'll have to figure out how it works. But for now, I'm assuming that since people can do documentaries and news reports on the real thing that's happening, I'm assuming you can also fictionalize the real thing that's happening. But we'll
One would
see.
think. I mean, you never know in today's day and age, but I'm intrigued that
Yeah.
it works out for you with ease and effortlessly, and that the next book we see out
Oh.
from you is a Quidditch book.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, so tell me, how did was it Harry Potter? Was it J.K. Rowling's that got you into writing in the first place, or how was it that you decided to be a writer?
So Harry Potter was a huge had a huge impact on me as a kid, but I think I actually was pretty set on writing even before I started. I think I encountered the books maybe in third or fourth grade, and I had been writing books since probably kindergarten or even younger.
Wait,
My
pause, hold on,
mom.
pause and rewind, Anna. I think I just heard you say you've been writing books since kindergarten or younger. Did I hear you correctly?
That's correct. And I use the term books very loosely in that case.
Okay.
But my mom has a book that I wrote. I think it looks like I was about, 5 years old. It's stapled together with the colored with markers. And it's called A Girl at School. And it starts, Once upon time, there was,
Oh.
every
Oh.
single word is spelled wrong. There was a
Oh.
girl.
That is
And it has about four
fantastic.
pages, but I was and I illustrated as well as wrote. But yeah, so I've been doing that for a very long time.
That is amazing. And so, did you just decide, did you know unequivocally that you always wanted to grow up to be a writer?
So I think I was such a big reader, like from as long as I can remember, and as long as there are pictures of me, I was reading. And my mom was really amazing. She would, get big stacks of books, either from the library or from the bookstore, and just read to me. She'd read the whole stack. I would ask her to read the whole stack again. Sometimes she would fall asleep reading to me,
Oh.
and I would just start poking her and be like, "No sleeping. Continue reading, please." Like a little tyrant. And then my dad would try and read me and my older brother like The Hobbit or like what he considered classics. When we were going to bed. So I had a lot of just reading surrounding me, which and my older brother was a huge reader as well. And so I think I was kind of I saw all those books and I loved those books, and so I wanted to make books, but I didn't necessarily know that writing was a thing you could do until probably more like around third or fourth grade. I read this book that's not really that popular. It's called The School Story by Andrew Clements.
Okay.
His more famous book is Frindle, which maybe some of you have read. Frindle is about the boy who invents a word, a new word for pen. The word is Frindle.
That's amazing. I want to invent a new word.
Yeah. But so this other book is called The School Story, and it's about a girl who writes a book in, I think she might be in fifth or sixth grade, and she and her best friend decide, like, that this book is amazing, and one of them is a writer and one of them is, like, a big talker, and so she becomes, the talking friend becomes the agent, and so she sets up a whole fake, not fake, but she sets up a company, and she sends the book out to a publisher who is turns out to be the girl's mom, but they keep a pen name and they hide it, and they eventually publish the whole book.
Wow.
And it's kind of a weird choice, because I think, you know, now that I'm in kids writing, if I like thought, you know what, kids, like especially third and fourth grade kids really want to read about is like how to get an agent and a publisher. That's kind of a wild idea.
That's
but
amazing.
It, you know, it was the right book for me at that time when I picked it up, because I was like, wow, this is how you do it. And it kind of gave me a path, even though it was a, you know, it's a simplified, fictionalized path, but it really gave me an idea of what you needed to do if you wanted to be a writer. So I think from that point on, I was like, okay, here's my goal. That's what I'm going to do.
That's great.
I think in eighth grade, my best friend and I wrote novels side by side. Like we would send each other chapters as we wrote. And then she gave me for like my birthday that year, she gave me a book on how to get an agent, which
what?
Was very premature. Yeah. We were not at the point where we needed to be querying, but we thought we were.
Oh my gosh. So tell me, for some of the lay people out there, I know when I mentioned the show on social media, a lot of people expressed interest and said, wow, you know, that's something I actually am really curious about, because so many people I feel like have a book inside of them, but it's a whole other mm-hmm. thing to get a book published. So tell our listeners, especially the people who might not have had a book published before, when you say querying, what does that even mean?
Yeah. So what I would say like most normal route to getting traditionally published, and traditionally published means as opposed to self-published. I don't know very much about self-publishing, although I know that it's a really cool avenue that a lot of people take advantage of. It's not like my area of expertise. But for traditional publishing, which is when a publishing house buys your book and publishes it like through their presses, usually starts with the writer writing a whole book and then finding an agent to represent the book. Mm-hmm. And the agents, agents are amazing. They're just kind of people who know books and they know writers and they know editors and publishing houses. And they are able to help writers kind of navigate, especially new writers. But, you know, then once you have a relationship with an agent, you usually stay with them for hopefully the course of your career, kind of navigate this whole, like, what are we doing and how do we work with these people who have been in this industry for their whole lives and know exactly what's up. And, you know, I might be a brand new writer and have no idea what I'm doing. And so agents are like, they're kind of in some ways gatekeepers, but they're also, you know, cheerleaders and like editing partners and just people who believe in your book and want to help you sell it. And then they go out usually once they've worked with the author and made sure that the manuscript is like the best that both of you can make it, they go and start pitching it to editors. And then hopefully an editor becomes interested, makes an offer on the book where they say, you know, we'll give you so much money in advance and then so much money, so much percentage of royalties, like, you know, so much amount of money off of each book that is sold, basically. And then they usually, the agent and the editor work through, or the publishing house work through the contracts together, and the writer kind of sits back and does a lot of edits on the manuscript.
More or less, the
normal process. Yeah.
So was that the process that you took?
Almost, but I had sort of an extra step in with the Love Sugar Magic series. So I actually worked with a packaging company. It's called Cake Literary. It's a company that is sort of committed to making sure that there are more diverse, high concept books out there for, especially for young people, like middle grade and young adult books, but also I think they might someday move into the adult sphere as well. But so a packaging company And there are a couple different ones. Some of them are larger. Cake is kind of a small one. But it's basically a company that knows the books they want to see on the shelf. They know, you know, usually they know the kind of like market trends, I guess, or they know what's out there available right now, and they know what they would like to see to kind of fill in gaps. Okay. Or what they think would do well. And they find writers to pair with these projects that they already have in mind. So the Love Sugar Magic series was kind of the brainchild of the two women who run Cake Literary, Danielle Clayton and Sona Cherepotra.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Danielle is, they're both authors also. Danielle is the New York Times bestselling author of The Bells, which is an awesome series. And then the two of them together wrote Tiny Pretty Things, which is a sort of a like thriller series about a ballerina school.
Wow,
and then I think
Sona
has her own book coming out. Yeah, they're very cool. They're doing a lot of really awesome things, both with their own writing and then with supporting new writers through Cake. So yeah, so they kind of approached me. I met them through when I was in grad school, and they approached me and said, hey, we have been looking for someone to write a book about a Mexican-American family set in Texas. I was like, I come from a Mexican-American family in Texas. Like, that sounds good. And then they told me sort of the pitch, which is, you know, 11-year-old girl discovers that her family bakery is secretly a magic bakery. And I was like, well, that's everything I've ever wanted to write in
right?
my entire life. So,
I
want to
write
like,
that.
Yes,
you're already doing
please.
That sounds amazing.
Mm-hmm. So it was really fun to kind of work with them. The process after that point stayed more or less the same. I still wrote the book. We still had an agent paired on with the project who helped me edit, and also Danielle and Sona helped me edit it. And then we still sold it to, in my case, Walden Pond Press, which is a little imprint of HarperCollins. So, you know, the process was still more or less the same, but I had more collaborative. Oh, sorry.
Oh, don't worry.
More collaboration on the front end. Yeah.
Very cool. And so was that the first book then that you ever wrote and had published?
Yes, that is. This is my the first book in a series was my debut book. And then I'm now working with, I have an agent of my own, not through Cake Literary, but my own agent, Patricia Nelson. And we're kind of working on trying to get some other books out there. But for now, the Love Sugar Magic series is all through Cake Literary, and they're my first books.
So tell me a little bit, I'm fascinated by this concept, because I know you said it's an extra step that a lot of people don't go through, this packaging concept. So is it that packaging really makes a difference on who buys what sort of books? I never really put much thought into it. Obviously, there's packaging for a lot of other products.
So I'm not sure. Like, I know they're called a packaging company. I don't know, like, because they don't.
So it's not necessarily about the book cover. It's more about packaging,
no,
kind
it's
of
not.
The idea, and then the,
I'm trying to, like, word it now. It's more the idea of putting sort of expertise and know-how behind the initial concept. And also,
brilliant.
They're also on board to help with things like marketing and hype, for lack of a better term, that sometimes newer authors don't have, like, a lot of clout to do that. Packaging,
really,
but they're not the...
It's not
really
like the
cool,
package.
Yeah.
It's not like a package of, like, how important is the cover of the book. It's more of, like, kind of packaging all the things you would potentially need to have a best-selling book.
Yeah, definitely. So it's a cool thing. I think it's, for me at least, has been an amazing way to get my foot in the door of sort of the publishing world, see what it's like to work with an editor, you know, do all these things, even as a simple as thing, it's really not simple, as having a deadline has been kind of amazing because, you
well,
know,
wait,
so many writers.
Amazing? Did you just say having a deadline was amazing?
Well, because so many writers, and I think you were kind of saying this, like, people feel like they have a book in them, but most of the time, there's nobody waiting specifically for your book except for you, you know?
True.
So
you need somebody
hard,
to hold
I
you
think.
Accountable.
Yeah, it can be really hard to finish a book. I mean, it can, of course, be hard to start a book in the first place, but it can be extra hard if you've kind of started and taken a few steps and written a few chapters, and then things, you know, life gets in the way, or you lose your steam, or, you know, it's hard to find the time, and it just doesn't happen. And I think most writers can relate to that. Hopefully, you know, you found a way to work through it or to get past it. But like in my case, you know, it was very nice to have someone telling me, okay, this is due. So you have no choice but to write it. And I was like, okay, well, if I have no choice, then I guess I'll get it done.
Is there anything in particular you need in order to be able to write it, like to be effective or to be able to meet deadlines? Do you need space or do you have to do it in a particular place?
Oh man. This is kind of the eternal question, and I feel like writers that I know and writers that I don't know have been discussing this forever on Twitter and off Twitter. But I don't know. I think personally, I've gotten a little bit less, I guess, regimented about how I write. When I was maybe younger, I would think like, okay, like I have to be in this certain, or I have to have, I used to say I have to have absolutely no one around me and like several hours of free time, because otherwise I can't get into the flow. And you know, that was true at the time. But now recently I work as a tutor and pretty much full time. I have several different jobs and they're all part time, but I think together they make a full time job. yeah. And so I just don't really have that much of that luxury anymore. So a lot of my writing now happens in like the hours between appointments. So I'll have, you know, one appointment and then drive across town and kill 45 minutes before my next appointment starts. And so I've started to really kind of get into that like short amounts of time, short little writing bursts, you know, just 100 or 200 words at a time. And like slowly, if you do that a couple times every day, you will eventually get a book. It's still nice when I have a long amount of time. I also do coffee shops more now because I just live in a neighborhood that has a lot of nice coffee shops.
I know, that's like every writer isolation. I know goes to coffee shops because they just vibe kind of with that energy, I think.
Yeah, I used to feel like, you know, really like, oh no, it's such a, you know, expense. But I talked to a visual artist recently who was here in Houston, who rented like studio space. And we did some math and figured out
even if I went to
a coffee shop every single day and bought like a $5 coffee, which is not always what's happening, it would come out to about the exact same as a monthly rental and, or like, you know, office space or something like that. And I don't go every single day. So it's like, huh, I'm actually saving money. Ha, kind of, not really, but.
Well, I love what you're saying.
It did make me feel better.
Yeah, and what's great you're saying that I love is that it doesn't give us an excuse not to do it, because I feel like so many people out there, they might have kids or a full-time job like you or other things going on and be thinking to themselves, well, I can't do it. You know, I need 10 hours at a time uninterrupted with no kids or no other job or whatever it is. But what you're saying is, hey, are you going to spend $5 at Starbucks anyways? Go spend $5 at Starbucks in between your other meetings and make the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I think, you know, everyone I know who has kind of made the jump to full-time writing says that. Everyone I know who is a parent who is also a writer says that. It seems to be, you know, you kind of, even if it's small amounts of time, if you put a little bit of time most days of the week, or like, you know, at least once a week or something, as long as you're making some amount of forward progress. So it doesn't have to be 9 hours a day, 5 days or 7 days a week. But if you're making, you have to make some amount of progress. So yeah, definitely.
Now, so tell me a little bit more about something like a packaging company for people out there who might have struggled. Like, for example, I know somebody personally who has sent many queries out to agents and so forth, and has gotten really close, but then gotten declined or rejected. And I know that can be really disenchanting. Is somebody like, how do you even get aligned with something like Cake, for example, or another company like that, where it might get you one step closer to that signed deal that you've always dreamed of? Is that something that's available to everybody or to only certain genres?
So Cake Literary, as far as I know, has just sort of open calls. And they, because their focus is kind of getting more diverse fantasy or diverse high concept, basically things that are like exciting and thrillery and fun, for lack of a better term, I don't know, on the shelves. They usually are looking for people who can write own voices stuff. So they'll say, you know, hey, we would love to see a book about, they have a book called, I'm blanking on the title, Tristan Strong Breaks the World. That's not it. That's Sal and Gabby Break the Universe. Anyway, Tristan Strong does something. And it's about the kind of the folktale of John Henry, but brought into like a modern context with a character named Tristan who's, you know, living his life. So I think at some point they had put out a call for like, hey, if we have any Black men in America who want to write about this legend, like, hit us up. So they do tend to say like they're looking for specific people from specific backgrounds or locations or whatever. But you can always check out their website. You can always kind of put a sample, like send them a writing sample, and they can kind of keep you in mind for future projects. I don't know very much about other packaging companies like Glasstown, which is a name that I know, but I don't really know how you get in with working with them. Or there's another one, and I always blank on the name. Anyway, so I'm certain there are other packaging companies, including in other genres, but I'm not 100% sure how to always locate them or get in with them. I know some of them tend to approach authors who are more established, and some of them, like Cake, are more interested in finding new voices. But, you know, if you get on the internet and look around, you might be able to find some things.
Exactly. Speaking of getting on the internet, in case anybody is interested, it's called Tristan Strong Punches a Hole in the Sky. Does that sound right? By Kwame.
Thank you. Yes.
Our friend Google pulled that one up for me.
Thank you so much. Yeah. There's another book that recently came out called Sal and Gabby Break the Universe. And I was like, I know I'm mixing up those two, but I forgot.
Yeah, it's okay. It happens. And so for you personally, did you have to, or did you try to go the old traditional route of an agent before you connected with Cake?
I haven't tried it yet. I was planning to, but as I said, I was in grad school studying writing for children and hadn't finished any books of my own, although, you know, I was trying, and I had one manuscript that I did end up putting in a drawer because it had so many problems, and I was just like, you know what, I learned a lot of things, but I don't really need to.
I don't need to publish
to
that.
Yeah, exactly. It has so many problems. So I was, you know, actually just starting what I was kind of hoping to be a book that I would finish and query with when I was approached by Cake. So, or when I approached Cake, I don't know, we met each other.
when you connected, got it.
Yes, exactly. So I didn't actually query before doing that. Once I queried, I already had the book out, so it was kind of a unique experience. So I never had the really long query process that I know a lot of writers go through. And it is a lot of rejection. You were kind of mentioning how people can get disenchanted. But I think a lot of times it's a matter of like perseverance, because there's just so many people in the world, and they all have specific tastes, and they all have specific things that they're looking for in a book. So, you know, if you're getting close, if people are saying like, oh, I mean, I really liked the book, it just had some problems, then oftentimes that's not even a sign that you need to change anything in the book. It's just a sign that you haven't yet found the exact right person for it. Because it's so subjective. Like, I mean, everything. Yeah.
I was going to say, I think that it's funny we're talking about this, because I was talking to one of my colleagues earlier today about a failure she was going through, and she's like, oh gosh, you know what, I just feel like I failed. And there was this artist years ago named Duncan, and I remember very vividly having lunch with him and Marina Del Rey, and he was part of a personal development program I was in, and he literally was handing out business cards, and his art, Duncan something or other, he's an Australian artist, is selling for the highest price that anybody has ever received for a living artist And he was telling us the story over lunch that he actually had 10,000 people tell him no. And he was unwavering on how much money he would take for his first painting because it was his intention to be paid over like $1 million for a piece of art while live. And he actually set the precedent. And, you know, it was totally subjective. Some people might really love his art and some people might not find it good at all. But because he was willing to stick to his guns, he now is the probably, I think this was a few years ago, but the best paid artist in the world because he heard 10,000 no's.
That's pretty, that's an amazing and extreme version, but yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's, you never know. I mean, you just have to be willing to fail. And I think that's one of the unfortunate things in society today that's a concept I'm exploring for a TED Talk right now, is how we don't give our young adults an opportunity to fail, is that we think that failing is bad, and it's actually the stress of failing that builds us as human beings and allows us to be successful later in life.
Yes, and we're unfortunately, there's also a lot of, you know, questions about who gets to fail. And like some people maybe have more support and are able to fail. We maybe still don't see it as a good thing, but at least we know that, you know, they can come back from it. Whereas other people, it's kind of like one failure and it's, you don't have a support system to bring you back up and to give you another chance to use that experience or that expertise that you have.
Yeah, and the good news is, though, in something like writing in today's day and age, I think it was the first or second week of July of last year of 2018, if anybody's interested, I did have a very successful best-selling artist on the show who self-published her books, and it was fictional books. And then back in, I think it was June of last year, the year before, I had somebody else on the show, Alicia Denhams, who teaches people how to write a bestseller on a weekend. And so there's so many ways out there that if you're passionate about it, heck, I even took Mark Victor Hansen, the guy from Chicken Soup for the Soul's writing class years ago before I published my book.
Yeah.
It really was very helpful. So.
Yeah, that's one thing I've found is that there's so many people, I mean, in my case, writers, but you know, whatever you're interested in, I'm sure there are people in your field as well. So many writers who were willing to help new people and are, you know, doing everything they can to boost people up behind them, especially, you know, people like Danielle and Sona, who are running Cake Literary, but also kind of people who are more my peers. Like I'm in a group right now called Las Musas. We're kind of a just little collective group of Latina authors, Latinx authors who are just kind of all having our either first or second novel come out this year. And we're just trying to promote each other and share advice and share kind of what we're feeling in this like kind of strange journey that not that many people get. And it's been really nice to be part of that and to have people there to support. There's also debut groups by year on like Twitter and Facebook where people band together and say that our first book is coming out this year. Let's not do it alone. Let's make sure that we all, you know, have someone to talk to when our royalty checks are turning out weird and nobody knows what that means, or when, you know, Barnes and Noble nixes our cover. Oh, sorry?
Yeah, it's important to have a support group to help you lift you up and not tell you all the reasons you can't do it, but rather all the reasons you can.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's amazing. So,
and that was one of the things. Oh, no, sorry.
Oh, go ahead. What were you going to say? That was one of the things that what?
Oh, that was one of the things that I got from grad school, doing grad school in creative writing. I think a lot of times it's not really necessary to write a book, but it was a great way to connect with peers who were also writing books.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's, you know, one person by yourself, you can't do it alone. We're designed as human beings. And I think you and I talked about this in the pre-show check-in, to be collaborative. And the more that you have one person, two person, three people, five, 10, 20 to support you, the more you're going to be able to sustain success over long times rather than give up at the first time it gets hard.
Yeah, absolutely.
So tell me, Anna, were there any other things that I didn't ask you about or any points that you'd love to leave our listeners with for today?
Were there any other things? I guess, so I was telling you in the pre-show, that I'm actually going to be in San Francisco or in Berkeley, weekend after next, May 4th and 5th for the Bay Area Book Festival, which is going to be a super fun event, and a lot of the other authors from Las Musas group are going to be there also. We'll have a panel. There's something called literary death match, so that should be cool. I don't exactly know what that is, but
wow, that sounds awesome.
So like if anyone is kind of in the Bay Area listening or can, you know, wants to go to the Bay Area and have a book festival, it's all going to be, I think they're going to have teens and preteens moderating all the panels. So it should be really kid friendly, family friendly, fun. So I'm doing that. And then, yeah, if you ever want to check out my books or any of the other books from Cake Literary, you can find those online at the Cake website. You can look up Cake Literary Stories from Scratch.
Very cool.
Or my website, annamariano.com.
Awesome. And tell people again the name of the series that you have out, just in case they want to look it up and find it.
Yeah, it's called Love, Sugar, Magic. The first book is called A Dash of Trouble. Second book is A Sprinkle of Spirits. And it's all about magical baking in a family panaderia in Texas.
That's amazing. And what age group would you say that's for? It's young adult, or who is it geared towards? Children?
A little younger. It's about ages 8 to 12.
Okay, perfect. So
it's around the main character is 11. It's around the reading level, though not necessarily the quality of the first Harry Potter book.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah, so that kind of like, you know, 11-year-old. But I've had really good luck with kids as young as 5 when it's read out loud to them. There's also a beautiful audiobook narrated by Kyla Garcia.
Perfect.
And so, yeah. And ebooks and everything you can get at your library or your local indie bookstore.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much, Anna. It's so fun. You know, you and I had met probably at some point last year. I think it was in September. And I just, so rare that you get to meet somebody who's fulfilling their dream, and getting to write children's book just seems like such a cool idea. And it's awesome to hear your story and how you've been successful.
Well, thank you so much. It was really fun talking. I'm so glad we, you know, met up, connected, and got to do this.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much too to all of our listeners who tuned in for today's show. Again, if you are interested in book publishing, you can go back to the show from last July, first or second week. We had an author on the show about self-publishing, and then another show that we did in June, I think 2 years ago, as well, with Alicia Dunham's. And both of those shows can focus a little bit more on self-publishing. And, you know, and then again, for Anna's show, she gave you a little bit of an insight onto how to get a book published. And I love the idea of this cake, because it's a new idea I had never heard before in the publishing world. So it might make a difference for someone out there listening.
Yeah, I hope so. Well, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much. And if you missed any portion of today's show, do keep in mind that you can go to the bottom of the latalkradio.com/getyourselfthejob page and go to the archive section of the show and find this and any other prior shows on the archive section and download them and listen to them there. You can also find the show on iTunes under Get Yourself the Job on iTunes. You can subscribe, listen at your leisure. Please feel free to leave us any feedback, comments, likes, ratings on the show. And thank you so much for everybody who tuned in today. And we look forward to having you join us next week at 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.